You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Gregor Chisholm, our MLB.com Blue Jays reporter. Gregor, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
All right, it's a new year that is starting off just the way the old one ended, and that is with very slow off-season news around Major League Baseball. Nothing seems to be going on, just small rumors. Eventually, it's got to heat up, and I guess the longer it takes for it to heat up, the more action there will be in a small amount of time before spring training. So at least there's something to look forward to. In the meantime, let's look at this Blue Jays roster, how it is constructed right now. And one area that they have added to, obviously, with some depth pieces is the infield. You have a story up on BlueJays.com about that right now. But as it looks, the starting infield is going to be the same as what we saw a year ago, right? I mean, the pieces they've added don't look like they're going to crack that lineup as far as everyday players.
Yeah, I think so. And the one potential storyline to watch is whether or not the Blue Jays do take a look at moving Devin Travis to the outfield. That's kind of been a back burner issue for them this offseason and gives them a little versatility in the fact that they think that they could potentially do that. And there is a scenario where you could see Elias Diaz getting some playing time at second base. But ultimately, I think that they're going to stick with the status quo. I think Devin Travis is going to be back at second base for another year. And then obviously you've got everybody else around the infield where you're hoping they come back from injuries, which is Troy Tulowitzki. He's obviously going to be the everyday guy at shortstop. And Josh Donaldson, they're hoping for an MVP caliber season from him. And Justin Smoke, hoping for a return to form at first base. So it really does seem to be the status quo. I don't think you're going to see too much done, although the Jays continue to insist that they're interested in adding more depth there, which is a bit curious because they have added Diaz already. They added Gift and Gopay from Pittsburgh as well. So as things stand right now, even though the Jays haven't done much this offseason, the infield actually is the one area in the team where you can look at that and say, okay, it's better now than certainly it was at the end of the season.
Yeah, it makes you wonder really how concerned they are about Travis, who seems to be always injured, and Tulowitzki and his age right now.
Yeah.
How much real concern there is if they're still looking to add more depth, certainly. All right, the catching situation is another area where there's obviously an aging veteran situation. Russell Martin, still the guy, I would think. The hope is he'll be out there the majority of the games, but maybe every year a few less as far as catching goes. How confident are they in Luke Maley as far as backing him up and being able to really step in a good amount of games?
Yeah, you know, I think they're confident, especially in the sense that they know that Luke Maley is going to be great with the pitching staff. You know, as much as people like to talk about the bat, you know, the glove is what you prioritize first and foremost with the backup catcher. And so I think that, along with the game calling, is going to give him the inside edge there. But, you know, the problem is that, you know, this has been a storyline now around the Blue Jays for the last 3 years, really. It's how do you find more opportunities to rest Russell Martin? I mean, the Blue Jays really haven't had that reliable of a backup since he came to Toronto as a free agent, and they talk about it every year. But ultimately, it seems that at the start of every season, he's kind of forced back into that role where it's hard for John Gibbons to keep him out of the lineup. And part of that is Russell Martin's mentality and wanting to be out there every day. But the other part is that they've never had a backup where they wouldn't want to do more than just kind of sprinkle that guy in from time to time. And I think that's the role that Maley's going to have next year. So in some ways, it really is the status quo. The interesting thing to watch here will be, you know, if Martin goes on the DL at some point in time, which he's done, you know, each of the last several years, you know, instead of giving the bulk of the everyday at-bats after that happens to a guy like Maley, I think you could see some of the Jays' youth come into play there. A prospect like Dan Jansen, I mean, he's going to need to play every day at the start of the year, and that's going to happen in AAA. But he could be the catcher of the future. And if Martin goes down and suddenly everyday at-bats become available, you could look at a scenario where Maley still finds himself in that backup role, and the everyday at-bats actually go to one of the prospects, either Dan Jansen or a guy like Reese McGuire.
Yeah, certainly nice to have that depth and those players down on the farm, and the Blue Jays now have more of that than they've had in recent years. there is some young talent on the way to help out this team for sure. All right, you have a story up on the site about five questions facing the Blue Jays organization in 2018. I want to get into those a little bit. These are questions that will be answered eventually. I'm not looking for answers from you right now, Gregor. I just want to get into the importance of these questions. And the first one you have is, will Aaron Sanchez overcome the blister problems, reestablish himself as a bona fide front of the rotation starter? When you look at that question, if he doesn't, does this team have any chance of contending?
No, I don't think they do. And you could say that about a couple of guys on that roster in terms of being wild cards, but Aaron Sanchez is at the top of that list. I mean, last spring, we spent a lot of time talking about how the Blue Jays rotation was going to be the biggest key in potentially them contending. And obviously that did not work out last year with Sanchez missing a lot of time, Jay Happ missing a lot of time as well. But, we saw in 2016, Aaron Sanchez as a fringe candidate for the American League Cy Young Award. I mean, he was the ERA leader for that entire year. It was the first time Blue Jays fans got to see him as a starter over the course of a full season. And so the scary thing about him was, as good as he was in 2016, there was an expectation that he was going to be that much better in 2017. And now the big question mark is, how does a lost season kind of derail some of that development? But the Jays certainly need him to be really a bona fide ace to go along with a guy like Marcus Stroman. And if he can be that, then suddenly you're talking about, that rotation once again becoming a major strength instead of the weakness it was in 2017.
You have a question about Devin Travis. I feel like we covered that already on the podcast, so we'll skip ahead to Josh Donaldson. Will this be Josh Donaldson's final season in Toronto? And I guess I'll spin that to say, is there any chance that they extend Josh Donaldson before he reaches free agency, or would it just be a situation where he becomes a free agent and then they try to bring him back?
Yeah, I really don't see an extension happening. I mean, there just hasn't been much talk at all about it. It will be something that could pick up towards the end of January. I mean, one thing that could spur that a little bit is the fact that Donaldson, his arbitration case is looming. That will force the agent and the team to get together. But ultimately, I think that they're going to look for something short-term and just a one-year deal and then have Donaldson hit the market next year. And so, the question of Donaldson's status with this organization and how long he's going to be here is going to linger around this team pretty much all season long. And, I think it's pretty clear that if the Blue Jays get off to a strong start and contend, that he's going to stick around. And if they get off to a slow start in April and May, then you're certainly going to be talking about a potential trade at the non-waiver trade deadline. So it really could go either way. But certainly, one thing I think the Jays do think that they have working in their favor a little bit is that next year's free agent class is pretty crowded. There's a lot of elite players who are going to be on that market, and that might allow them to be patient a little bit more. And that could be one reason why we're seeing them, risk keeping a player like Donaldson in the final year of his deal, whereas before, a lot of other organizations would either look to lock him up long term, and if they can't do that, then make a move. The Jays are kind of doing that middle ground right now where they're keeping him in the fold but not necessarily looking that strongly at trying to lock him up long term either.
Yeah, you're looking at a free agent class that has two third basemen that are MVP type guys in Machado and Donaldson. It's pretty impressive. Just a piece of that amazing 2018 free agent class that we expect to see next offseason. Next question, do the Blue Jays have enough depth to combat an aging roster? And we talked about the fact that at this point it seems like they feel like they still need to add more.
Yeah, they do. And I think that, on paper, the infield, as we touched on, looks pretty solid on paper. The fact that you've got Diaz as the backup and Gopé as minor league depth really kind of taking over the role that Ryan Goins had. So certainly the infield depth is better. The outfield depth is better, too, because you've got Teoscar Hernandez now for a full season. You've got Anthony Alford waiting in the wings and another year along in his development. So they've got a lot of options in the outfield as well. The thing is that the Jays are still kind of missing that impact bat, and that's one thing that has been slow to develop this offseason. A team that's coming off scoring the fewest runs in the American League, there really does seem to be a need to do something more than just the depth. But I think that if they're able to make, one of those significant moves before the start of spring training, suddenly you are talking about a team that probably does have enough depth compared to what it did a year ago. I mean, so many games last year went to guys like Ryan Goins and Darwin Barney, Ezekiel Carrera in the outfield. Those are spots that certainly can be upgraded, and so far that's the one area where you can point to on this roster and say the Jays are better equipped now than they were previously.
The final question is, which version of Justin Smoak will show up? And you look at 2017, if you just look at the stat line, Gregor, it was just an absolute breakout year for Smoak, 38 homers, 90 RBIs. He played 158 games as a guy that wasn't always a full-time player in his career, and even hit 270. The problem is those numbers before August 1st were a lot better, and he struggled down the stretch, and he kind of resorted back to, I think, what a lot of people thought Justin Smoak was as a player. So how confident is the team that the Justin Smoak that they saw before the All-Star break is the real guy?
I mean, publicly, they're certainly confident. They pointed to some injuries that he was dealing with later in the year, and the fact that fatigue was probably a factor over the final 2 months of the season as a guy who was playing every day for the first time in a few years. And so, certainly those things could be a factor, but at the same time, those 2 months, final 2 months of the year, Justin Smoak were very similar to the player that we saw before. And so the question is, did he really figure out something in those first 4 months, or was it one of those extended hot streaks that we've seen from players from time to time? But the challenge with the Blue Jays is that, as we touched on, they're coming off a year when they scored the fewest runs in the American League. Their offense needs to get a lot better, and they can't afford to have much regression at all from Justin Smoak. Because he's one of the key cogs in that lineup. And so they're looking to improve elsewhere. They need to get more production from the corner outfield spots. They need to keep a lot of their other guys healthy. But if this lineup's actually going to be good enough to contend and significantly better than it was in 2017, you need to get a similar level of performance from Smoak. Otherwise, his regression will offset some of the gains elsewhere.
All right, those are some questions we will be monitoring throughout the season. And if the answers turn out to be right, this Blue Jays team could be a very good ball club in 2018. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition. For Gregor Chisholm, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Brittany Giroli, our MLB.com Orioles reporter, the first podcast of the new year. Happy New Year, Brittany.
Happy New Year to you.
All right, let's start with Manny Machado talk, because that seems to be about the only chatter going on around the Orioles and most of baseball right now, as this hot stove season continues to just kind of crawl along as we get into January here. But you continue to hear little rumors about Manny, and you continue to hear that the Orioles have yet to be impressed by any of the offers coming from other teams. The team you hear the most about lately, I think, is the Boston Red Sox, which to me makes little sense on either side. One, why would the Orioles trade him within the division if they can avoid it? And two, why would the Red Sox make a move like this when it's a one-year deal for Manny Machado? So to me, of all the teams that we've heard in the mix for Manny Machado, maybe Boston makes the least sense, yet I've heard more about that than anything. Your thoughts, Brittany?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this stuff is just still dragging on. If you're the Orioles, you kind of have to decide, are you going to move forward with Manny Machado or not? And, they kind of had a self-imposed deadline, and now everything that's coming out is, well, they could still trade him, they're still talking to teams, and I think it's going to end up costing them if they spend their whole offseason wrapped up with whether or not they're going to trade Manny Machado, because, I mean, they're not alone in this boat, but we're in January now. They haven't made any moves of consequence. So I agree with you. I have a hard time seeing him go to Boston. Unless they can get those two young pitchers that are major league ready that they would like. I think that would probably be a game changer, getting two guys they can put into that rotation. That's certainly their biggest need. But it is a little puzzling on the surface. I just think that his market isn't there, for better or worse. They put him on available at kind of a weird time. Maybe if they had done it at the trade deadline last year, maybe if they had done it last winter. But they weren't fully ready to deal with Manny Machado until now. And I just have a hard time seeing a scenario unfold where they're able to deal him. I think he's probably in uniform in spring training.
Yeah, you would think at this point, where there's no real urgency for other teams, it's better to just wait, because if the Orioles aren't in the race come July, there will certainly be demand for Manny Machado from a team trying to add that piece at the deadline. And the Orioles, you would think, with that urgency from another team, maybe could still get a decent return, or at least one or two big pieces in a return, even though it would be a rental for the other team for Manny Machado, because teams just tend to be more desperate at the trade deadline than they are during the winter. So certainly we'll have to keep an eye on. Now, for the Orioles fans, best case scenario at this point, I guess, is that they are in contention at the deadline, and he stays with the Orioles, and he plays out this contract and gets Baltimore back to the playoffs. But we will see. And that brings us to one of the articles you have on the site right now, which is five questions that need to be answered for the Orioles in 2018. These are going up for every team on MLB.com, and some interesting questions for the Orioles, Brittany. So I wanted to go through these with you, and one of them relates directly to Manny Machado. Will they trade any big players? It seems probably not for him, but what about the rest of the roster?
Probably not. I mean, Zach Britton, unfortunately, with his Achilles injury, he's going to be out at least till June or July, so his value has really gone down. Brad Brock is a guy they could trade, but without Zach Britton, I think they feel less confident being able to trade a guy out of that bullpen. So, again, I think the chances are slimmer and slimmer that you see one of those big names, so to speak, moved.
All right, the next question, who will be the new additions to the Orioles' rotation? And this is something that I think the Orioles would have loved to at least have partially answered by this point, but we continue to talk about how slowly things are moving. But the idea of the type of pitcher that will probably fill those roles hasn't changed since the beginning of the offseason, right? It's not going to be a huge, big contract kind of guy, but they do need guys that can fit in towards the top of that rotation.
Right, they do. And, you know, I don't know what the holdup is. I think maybe because there are so many bigger names still available, you know, guys like Yu Darvish that are still out there, and maybe they're waiting for some of those names to fall. But again, I think teams are a little hesitant to buy starting pitching, specifically the Orioles. The last time they offered a big free agent starting pitching contract was to Ubaldo Jimenez, and, you know, that one did not pan out at all. So that's why I think the Orioles are so intent on trying to see what they can get with this Manny Machado trade route, because the free agent market, I mean, you're overpaying, competing with a lot of teams. I think the preference would be to be able to trade and get those guys, because it's a tough sell. Not only are you coming to Baltimore to face the Yankees and the Red Sox, but you're in a hitter-friendly Camden Yards. That's where you're playing your home games, and that can be tough for guys to decide, hey, you know what, I'm going to come to Baltimore over this other team that maybe is in the Central or the West and is in a more pitcher-friendly park. The Orioles are going to have a hard time drawing some of these free agent starters to Baltimore.
Ubaldo Jimenez, that deal actually happened during the beginning of spring training. Is there a chance that the Orioles report to spring training and they haven't quite figured out all of these holes in the rotation yet, and that they still end up adding maybe one more piece when they've already reported to the spring?
Oh, 100%. I mean, Dan Duquette, you look over the course of what he's done, and they've made a lot of late moves. Nelson Cruz is another one that got done when we were down in Florida. There's been a bunch of those deals. They've had many press conferences down in Sarasota. So I do think that will help a little bit if you're a fan, knowing that Dan Duquette is usually late to make moves on one hand. On the other, you can't always get lucky if you wait. I mean, sometimes the early bird catches the worm, and I think when you have as many holes as the Orioles have, in the event of there's only two starters right now in that rotation, you can't really afford to wait until everything's been picked over. You could maybe do that for one slot, you know, an outfielder or maybe a pitcher, maybe the left-handed bat that they want. But I don't think you can do that for all of these holes. I think they've got to get moving. And Dan Duquette referenced this in Orlando at the winter meetings last month. He said, we might have to move a little quicker than we're used to moving. So, yes, I think there's definitely the potential for a late move. But at the same time, they've really got to start plugging away at some of these holes. They can't rely on waiting until the last minute and hoping it works out.
Yeah, the market not agreeing with that plan to move quickly. The next question is, how will rookie catcher Chance Sisko fare? I'll change that. We don't know how he will fare, obviously, at this point. But in your mind, Brittany, is he at the proper place to embark on this major league career? Has he been prepped enough, and is he in a good position to possibly be the guy?
I think so. I mean, part of the reason they signed Wellington Castillo last year was because they didn't want to rush Chance Sisko. And, you know, it's his job to lose. They have Caleb Joseph as well. Chance Sisko is going to ultimately dictate how much he plays. And offensively, you saw signs of why they like his bat so much when he came up in September. He's still got some work that needs to be done behind the plate. He's made some strides under catching coach John Russell. I know they're really looking forward to having a full spring training with him, really starting to dial in some of those mechanics behind the plate. But certainly he's not rushed at this point in time. He did really well at AAA. This is what they wanted, this natural progression where they're not forcing guys up, they're graduating guys. And this is Chance Sisko's time to shine.
All right, next question is, How do Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter navigate things the final year of their contract? And I'll put the spin on it, Brittany. You talked about signing free agents and bringing in pitchers. Is it a factor at all that those guys are in the final year of their deals? I mean, obviously, Buck Showalter is a manager that's so well-respected that he could be a draw for a free agent player, but he's in the final year of his deal. Does that impact what they're trying to do this offseason?
I think so, and I think it's another reason why they're hesitant to blow the whole thing up. And, you know, part of it, his ownership wants to win now. They don't ever want to, you know, go through those long rebuilding. They remember those lean years of the all those consecutive losing seasons. So that is part of it. But, yes, of course, their contracts. I mean, it's really tough in the final year to do a total rebuild and say this is the direction the organization is going. And, you know, Buck has made it clear that he'd like to manage the Orioles beyond this year. You know, neither of them have had any conversations about contract extensions. If they have, they certainly haven't been made public. I do think that one of them returns. I don't think that this duo is going to stay intact for the foreseeable future beyond this year. I think the Orioles are really going to have to surprise a lot of people for that to happen. So certainly it's a big storyline. It's going to continue to be a storyline, in my opinion, until these contracts are resolved one way or another. And obviously a lot of it hinges on how this 2018 team performs.
Finally, can the Orioles compete with the Red Sox and Yankees, which goes with what you just said, whether or not they can perform? And I think I'll say this because we'll see. We'll find out if they can compete. But what do you think in your mind, Brittany, they still need to get done? What kind of players do they need to add in order to compete with the Red Sox and the Yankees?
I think they need frontline starters. I mean, you're just not going to be able to shut down Aaron Judge and Stanton, that Yankees lineup. You're not going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Chris Sale and David Price of the Red Sox unless you have that frontline pitching. So, yes, Dylan Bundy was great. They hope he takes another step forward. They hope Kevin Gausman rebounds. But I think you've got to get some legitimate arms in that rotation if you're going to have a hope of competing in the American League East. Their lineup is what it is. They've got lots of power. There are lots of strikeouts. But certainly if they could pitch just a little bit better, they were so bad statistically at the bottom of nearly every major starting pitching category in the American League that if they can improve on that just a little bit, this is a team that, you know, until their final slide, this, the last few weeks of the season, was really in the playoff hunt for most of the year. So to me, the biggest thing that's going to keep them competitive is going to be the pitching. They can't go into New York and Boston with a rotation as it shapes up right now with a bunch of guys who don't have any experience who are going to be handed spots because there's no competition. They got to go out and they've got to sign some serious pitching.
The rotation does not have to be great. It just can't be terrible. I think that's the theory at this point going into the season for the Orioles. All right, great stuff. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Brian Hoke, our MLB.com Yankees reporter. And Brian, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Tim.
All right, 2018 has the every reason for Yankees fans to believe could be a very promising season for this team, obviously. And eights, I believe, in the history of the Yankees are pretty good as far as championships go, so they'll try to add to that in 2018. We'll look ahead a little bit on this podcast to that with some key questions facing this organization. But first, to more newsworthy stuff, and Manny Machado rumors continue to swirl around, even if they don't really make any sense on either side. But the Orioles seem still willing to trade him, although they don't seem like they've been impressed by anyone's offers. But the thing that stands out the most to me, Brian, is that the two of the teams you hear the most about are the Yankees and the Red Sox, two teams in the American League East that you would think that the Orioles would have no want to trade him there. But you've written a story now just today about the Yankees still being interested in Manny Machado.
I think you have to be when a player of that caliber is on the open market and there's even a possibility that they might be moved. But like you said, Tim, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because I don't personally see the Yankees wanting to give up two or three legitimate prospects to trade for a guy who they could just sign next offseason. But I suppose it's possible. You know, if you ask me 2 months ago, were the Yankees going to get Giancarlo Stanton, I probably would have said no. And so here it is. I think that what the Yankees are doing, what the Red Sox are doing, everybody's doing, he's kicking the tires on that. But I do think it would take a lot of convincing for Peter Angelos to trade Machado within the American League East, to have to look at him 19 times in a Yankees or Red Sox uniform. But the Yankees are one of the few teams who has the farm system who could get a deal like that done. What we've heard is that Baltimore would want a pair of young, cost-controllable starting pitchers, people who they would have for years to come. You know, Jordan Montgomery comes to my mind as one guy who could do that, Justice Sheffield, Chance Adams. Those are all guys in the Yankee farm system who fit the bill, but I'm still not convinced that the Yankees are especially willing to give those guys up, send them to Baltimore, because then they have to look at them for the next 5-6 years in an Orioles uniform. I think that the more likely outcome is Machado is the opening day third baseman for the Orioles, and then at this time next offseason, we're talking a whole lot about the Yankees and the Red Sox and everybody else chasing him and knocking on Machado's door and offering him untold amounts of money. So we'll see how it plays out.
It'll be interesting, too, if the Orioles fade out of things during the season come the trade deadline, when teams will maybe have some more urgency to make a deal and the Orioles maybe won't be asking for as much in return. Maybe something even happens then. But, yeah, it doesn't make much sense to deal away prospects when you can just wait it out. But imagine an offseason in which the Yankees were able to acquire Machado and Stanton. That would be something, but still not likely. All right, you have another story on Yankees.com about Gleyber Torres, and the story is more about the fact, I think, Brian, that this guy was so close to making it up to the big leagues before Tommy John surgery, and obviously he's been out for a while now, and maybe he's faded from people's minds, but he's going to be just as close once he's healthy come this spring.
He should be, and while he's coming off Tommy John surgery, it was to his non-throwing shoulder, so the Yankees don't really believe it's going to set him back. He actually said that he wanted to play winter ball. He wanted to. He asked the Yankees. They said, no way, hold on. We want to make sure you're 100% for spring training, and I think part of that is because of the opportunity that's ahead of him. You know, with a guy, a ceiling like Gleyber Torres has, he's 21 years old. He's knocking on the door of the big leagues. As you mentioned, he probably would have got some time in the big leagues last year. Brian Cashman said that in the story that I posted. If he had not injured his elbow in a June game in Buffalo sliding into home plate, you probably would have seen him in the big leagues last year, and it may have prevented the Yankees from trading for Tom Frazier. We may have never had the thumbs down and all that stuff going on because Gleyber Torres could have come up and handled third base. And so I think that you always wonder how that would have gone, but I think Gleyber Torres, his future, his ceiling is all intact. It's very high. This is a very exciting talent, and it's really not a question of if we're going to see him in Yankee Stadium. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, he can kind of do it all. It'll be something to see him added to this young core that the Yankees have put together. All right, on to the five questions, another story you have up about things facing this organization throughout 2018. I'm not looking for answers here, Brian, since that's the whole point of the story, is these questions have yet to be answered. But let's get into the questions and how important they are. Number one, right what we were just talking about, Gleyber Torres is obviously almost ready, and there are questions at second and third base. Who else is in that discussion, though? If it's not Gleyber Torres to take over those roles, who are the other guys that the Yankees are going to be looking to in the spring?
Well, we can go back to Manny Machado. Is he on the roster yet? I think that as currently constituted, you'd be looking at Miguel Andujar at third base, Torres at second base, and then you'd have other guys like Ronald Torres, Tyler Wade, Thairo Estrada. Those guys are all in the mix as well. Tyler Wade's a guy that the organization is very high on. I know he didn't hit a whole lot in the big leagues last year. They really see him as a Ben Zobrist type, and I think that's a perfect fit for what you have. Ronald Torres has already done it at the big league level. He filled in terrific for Didi Gregorius last April when he missed most of the month. You got a guy who can play short, second, and third. I think that they could patch from within with what they have. Andujar, the bat, can play. They think the defense is going to play at third base. So they definitely have legitimate options on the inside, but you're also continuing to hear discussion that the Yankees have touched base with the Pirates for Josh Harrison. There's a few other names out there that they've touched base on, and I'd be surprised if the Yankees didn't try to add a veteran who could fill in if they went with two rookies there, but We'll see what happens. I think that they do have legitimate choices, especially with Torres at second base and Andujar at third.
Staying in the infield, another question is, can Greg Bird stay on the field? Obviously missed so much of 2017, but when he was on the field, he obviously was effective. They like to think of him as the first baseman of the future. When injured, if injured, who would be the other names that would fit into first base?
Well, you've got Tyler Austin, who you've seen a little bit at the big league level. He could play some first base. I think that they've got some depth there a little bit, but I really think that they're banking so heavily on Bird playing a full season. And, you know, he came up at the end of 2015. You saw it. He had 11 home runs late in the year. Missed all of 2016, missed most of 2017, but you saw in the postseason why they were so adamant on banking on him. This is a guy with a legit left-handed stroke. It's perfect for Yankee Stadium. I know he obviously has to stay on the field, and until he proves he can do that, I guess there will be a question there. But the reason you're not seeing the Yankees linked to somebody like an Eric Hosmer is because they believe so steadily that Greg Bird is their guy. And I wouldn't be shocked if they pick somebody up. You remember last year, they were already in spring training when Chris Carter kind of fell into their laps, and they brought him in, and he wound up getting a lot of at-bats at first base. But they really want Greg Bird to be that guy, and I think they're going to give him every opportunity.
All right, the next question, how will Stanton and Judge coexist? And I guess part of that, right, is where will they play and how will they rotate? And your best guess, you know, how much is the DH spot going to be a factor versus right field versus maybe left field and how these guys all fit into things?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And even Aaron Boone asked the Yankees what Judge might look like in center field if he had to put him out there. You remember Judge was drafted as a center fielder out of Fresno State. So I don't think that they're anxious to do that. I don't think they're looking to do that very much. But there's definitely going to be a rotation there. I think that you're going to see a lot of Judge in right field, Stanton at DH. I would expect that Judge plays more than 50% of the games in right field and Stanton plays more than 50% of the games at DH, but that's really up to Aaron Boone at this point. I think that remains unsettled. Brett Gardner is going to be your starting left fielder. He's going to play the majority of the time out there. Aaron Hicks has got center field pretty much locked down, although Jacoby Ellsbury is going to try to challenge him for it. So I think that they're going to try and rotate them as much as they can, but there were so many times last year, and I remember watching Judge early in the year and thinking, man, maybe this guy should just be a DH because he's flipping over the right field wall at Fenway Park. He's slamming into the outfield walls. This guy plays the game 100% all the time. And just to kind of keep that bat in the lineup, I think that time at DH would be valuable for him. I know that that's not what Aaron wants. Aaron wants to be on the field 9 innings every game. But just to preserve that bat because it's so valuable to the lineup when he's right. You remember that shoulder injury he had, that probably stemmed from April when he flipped into the seats at Fenway on his birthday and kind of nagged him the whole year. So if you can avoid something like that, I don't see why Aaron Boone would not want to do that.
All right, another question is Aaron Boone ready for this? And I think a lot of that has been answered as far as we know he can deal with the media. We know he can probably get along in a clubhouse very well. Is it kind of down at this point to just the X's and O's and how he handles a game?
I think that what he's going to have the challenge starting when the team is down there in spring training because I think that the media part of this he has no problem with. I think that interacting with the players in the clubhouse, he's not going to have any issue there. He knows what that was like. He did it as a player. He was very good at it as a player, a good teammate, good presence around the clubhouse. I think that what it's going to be is the in-game stuff, and there will be things that comes up and that he has not seen before in the dugout. I think that the speed of the game will definitely take an adjustment for him, and that's why he surrounded himself with a coaching staff that he can trust. The Yankees have talked about Larry Rothschild almost being like a second manager. He obviously managed in Tampa Bay a few years back. They have experience with that. I think that's going to come in valuable for Aaron, and I think that the X's and O's, as you said, that's where it's going to come down to for him because he's got good players. He should be a good manager because of that. I just think that there's going to be a few curveballs that come along the way, and he acknowledges that. He said that there's going to be a time where he brings up the wrong pinch hitter or brings in the wrong pitcher, and he's going to get roasted for it on talk radio, and that's just part of what managing in New York is all about. But I think that having played that half season in Yankee Stadium in in 2003. That's going to come in valuable for him because he knows what it's going to sound like. He knows what the volume is. It's amplified in New York. Everything really ramps up a little bit compared to, say, Cincinnati, where he played most of his career. So he gets it. I think he is going to be ready for it, and he's certainly had enough time now to get everything in a line, but it's going to be different that first spring going through it. I think that it's definitely going to be a learning process, and he'll be learning on the job.
All right, and finally, can they handle the expectations? Obviously, still a lot of young players. In 2017, the expectations were low, and they blew them out of the water and obviously reached the postseason and got within a game of the World Series. But now that suddenly becomes the expectations. How long into the season will it take before that question can be answered, do you think?
That's a good question. I think that they can handle it. I think that this is a team that, thinking back to last year, a lot of people were saying they were going to win 80, 81, 82 games and finish fourth or fifth in the American League East, and they were not giving them a whole lot of a chance. It was supposed to be a rebuilding year. They never believed that, and you heard that in the Yankee clubhouse. People kind of just disregarded that and said, well, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think we're better than people are giving us credit for, and that's what they proved on the field. So now you're coming off 91 wins. You were one win away from going to the World Series, and expectations are sky high. You just brought in the reigning National League MVP. I think that they are very legitimately going to be considered contenders, and I think that if they don't go to the World Series, it might be a disappointment for a lot of people. So I think that you're going to want to get off to a hot start and answer some of those questions. You know, if they come out of the gate and lose 20 out of 25, that's going to be a tough hole to dig out of. They always say that you can't win a pennant in April, but you certainly can lose one. So that's what the Yankees need to avoid. I think that spring training is going to be a proving ground for them. They are going to focus, especially with Stanton in camp now and Judge coming off his Rookie of the Year campaign. You've got Gary Sanchez, Severino, all these young guys, Greg Bird in camp. There's going to be a lot of attention. I think there's going to be standing room only at Steinbrenner Field this spring. So when the bell rings and they're up in Toronto for opening day, I think they are going to be ready for it. And I think that the challenge is going to be for Aaron Boone to deflect some of that stuff and really keep the focus on the players and make sure these guys do what they're supposed to do between the white lines, because if they live up to expectations, they're going to have a really good season.
There you have it, the five questions that everybody is going to be looking for the answers to throughout 2018. It's a season and a year that has plenty of promise for these New York Yankees. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everybody, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Rays reporter, Bill Chastain. Bill, Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
All right. Well, we have not spoken on the podcast since before the Evan Longoria trade, so we're obviously going to get into that quite a bit in this podcast. We'll also talk about five questions facing the Rays in 2018. You have a story up on the site about that right now. But let's start with Longoria. Obviously, it's a trade where there's been talk of the possibility of the Rays dealing their franchise player, but I'm not sure how seriously anybody took it until it happened. So let's get into it. Obviously, they trade him to the Giants. They get back Christian Arroyo, who is a prospect and a third base, left side of the infield kind of guy. They get Denard Span, who's going to make a lot of money in 2018, but he fills a possible need for the Rays as well. And then a couple of young pitchers that aren't highly touted prospects in Matt Crook and Steven Woods, but they are guys that could be useful pieces. And Woods in particular, I think, has some upside, some great stuff. He just has to figure out where the baseball is going when it leaves his hand. So let's get into it a little bit. First off, Longoria, obviously the face of the franchise, has been for so long. I know the fans are kind of crushed to see him go. But what does the dealing of Longoria mean for this franchise and where they stand right now?
Well, first off, I would agree with that. I'm a little stunned myself, even though I'm not really that down on the deal. I mean, based on the team's model and how they do things, a few weeks into the season, he would be a 10-5 guy. And then you really, you know, your hands would be bound on, you know, whether or not you could trade him. I think the timing was good, but it's still just kind of hard to believe. You know, I mean, he's the guy you've seen at third base since the beginning of the 2008 season. I think the last guy I saw start the season there was in 2008, and it was Willie Ibar. So it's been a while. But, you know, right now, I think the fans are a little bit stunned to see what it, you know, how it's going to shake out. You know, I think everybody wishes him well. It'll be interesting to see if he kind of has a rebirth with the Giants. Everybody is expecting the Giants to bounce back this year. The guys they got back in return, I'm kind of interested in them as well. In particular, I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen with Denard Span, because, you know, he's set to make $11 million this year, and that doesn't really fit in if the Rays indeed are trying to, you know, get rid of the payroll. So let's see how it shakes out.
Yeah, so Span's certainly a guy that maybe they can flip. You mentioned the payroll. It's 1 year, so it's obviously not a big sum of money over multiple years. That's the benefit and where they save money over the Longoria deal. He is from Tampa, and it sounds like he's excited about the possibility of playing for the Rays if that should come to fruition. But if you had to kind of call it, is in your mind the thought that they're more likely to trade him than to keep him at this point?
You know, everybody seems to think that the Longoria deal indicates that they're sacking the bats for the season and going totally young. I'm still not so sure about it. I mean, I think they might, there's still a chance they might, you know, run this team out there and see what they have this year. And then you could, you know, adjust if they're not doing well. Just for example, I think all of a sudden the infield comes together a little bit. You know, you have a place for Duffy now. I'd be very surprised if he's not going to be the third baseman. And of course, when he came over to the Rays, he was the, you know, the third baseman for the Giants. Span could be the Rays left fielder. There's a lot of moving pieces. It's going to be really interesting with what's left of the offseason and spring training to see what kind of team the Rays put together and what their approach is going to be. But I will say this, you know, while we all speculate, you know, that the Longoria trade was going to be the first piece, this and that, historically the team has never gone in that direction to just totally, you know, do what some of the other teams have done and put, you know, just all young players out there and say we're just building for the future.
Well, they have done a nice job of building up the farm system without completely breaking it down here, as the system is good once again. So I guess we'll be able to know the full direction the team is thinking about whether or not there's another move, I guess, right? Because if they're going to tear it down, then Colome, Odorizzi, these other guys, they're going to shop them, and you're going to find out what their plan is. But I think we'll quickly know, as far as rumors go, if that is the case and if the team's going to kind of go for it. How about Arroyo? Because he is the top prospect in this deal. He was pretty high up in the Giants system, although their system is not a strong one. He made it to the big leagues in 2017, but it sounds like the Rays will take their time with him, and he's not necessarily a part of the opening day plan for the Rays.
Again, who knows? I mean, the way things are going, but it is interesting that Arroyo is from Brooksville, which is just north of St. Petersburg and Tampa. And you know, he grew up a Longoria fan, so here he is replacing him. But, you know, I think all, you know, anything is open. I mean, it's the Wild West on the west coast of Florida. What's going to happen with this team this year? And I look at the roster. They're not exactly depleted of talent.
No, certainly. And they're a team that won 80 games last year, and you would think they could roll out a good team. Of course, the other teams in the division have toughened up as well, especially the Yankees this offseason. So I guess the last question as far as the trade goes is, who is now the face of the franchise for the Rays?
Well, somebody asked me that in one of the inboxes yesterday, and I'd have to go with Archer and Kevin Kiermaier. Of course, you know, Archer, is he going to be here this year based on speculation? But, you know, both of them are, you know, they get along with the fans well. They're fun to watch. The fans like watching them play. You know, both of them play hard, work hard. And I see them out there. You know, I've never seen either one of them, you know, not that I've ever seen anybody really on the Rays. Rays players generally are pretty nice to fans. But I see both of those guys going above and beyond. And they go out and do community things as well. So I could see those two being one or the other or both being the face of the franchise.
Yeah, that certainly makes a whole lot of sense. And like you said, if they're both there, Kiermaier will certainly be there. And even if this team decides to do a full rebuild, Kevin Kiermaier, I would think, would be a big piece of that rebuild with the amount of time he still has under team control and the team kind of team-friendly contract, I think it'll turn out to be deal that he signed. All right, your five questions facing the Rays in 2018, and some of these obviously relate to the trade as well. Number one, can Matt Duffy make a successful return after injuries in 2017? And I guess, Bill, that's even more important for this team after this trade.
I think it's too bad for Duffy, too, that this was really the first taste the Rays got of Duffy. He was very frustrated last year about the status of his heel, and I think they finally got it cleaned up with a second surgery. And at the end of the year, he seemed to be doing all right. So I'd be very surprised if he's not back this year. I think he's a really good player, and I don't think they'll lose a lot if he is the third baseman. I'm not sure they'd lose anything in the field with him at third, maybe a little bit with the bat. But this guy is a ball player, and I think that was a good deal the Rays made when they traded Matt Moore and got him. So some of the dividends from that, the Rays will probably be seeing this season.
All right, up next, is Jake Bowers the answer at first base? And the longer this offseason goes without the Rays making a move to add anybody into that equation, it's certainly starting to look more and more like they may head that direction.
If I was GM, he would be. I love this kid. You know, we've talked about it a lot. He's just very impressive to me. He's mature. He's got a disciplined strike zone, and he's got really nice power. And I thought when they traded Casey Gillespie last year, that might have been a little bit of an indication of their intentions because Gillespie was getting a lot of the reps at first base at Durham, and then they moved Bowers over there, and he'd been playing some outfield. He's not a bad outfielder, and he could give you some time in the outfield, but I think his best position is first, and that might have been a little bit of a hint of what their intentions were going to be.
Will Blake Snell continue on the track that he followed in the second half of 2017? Obviously, he struggled in the first half.
Boy, the Rays sure have to hope so. He was totally different in the second half. He made that one adjustment. He'd been starting his delivery from the right side of the mound, then he moved towards the center, and it kind of mechanically just kind of put everything into, clicked everything into place. I know a lot of people kind of thought that, me included, that he wasn't, that he was kind of afraid to let his stuff play in the major leagues. But I think it really was kind of a mechanical thing, and it might have gotten to his head a little bit, but he sure straightened it out, and he looked good and finished the season strong.
All right, and then you have, can Steven Souza elevate his performance to a higher level in 2018? And what does that mean exactly? I guess staying healthy the whole year would be a key too.
Well, of course, he made strides in that area this year. I've seen him mature quite a bit. When they got him, he was, all world at the AAA level. So you never know how that's going to translate. And in fairness to him, you never really got to get much of a look at him. He was injured so much of the time. But last year, he was on the field the whole time. He gave a really good accounting with his home run power. I think he'd like to make a little better contact. But he has matured in the field as far as I know, and he's even made fun of himself for a lot of the balls that he dove for and really didn't have a chance. Now he seems to, maybe it's because he's playing next door to Kiermaier and he can watch, the best outfielder in baseball. But, he's grown a lot in the outfield. He made a lot of great plays. And I think if he stays healthy, there's no reason he can't continue to grow and really become closer to that guy that everybody thought he could be when he was in the Nationals farm system.
And then finally, is Brent Honeywell a lock to find a spot in the Rays rotation? There's obviously a lot of talented arms. And maybe, Bill, does this kind of depend on other moves the team possibly makes? I mean, if they were to deal another starter, he would obviously be very much in that equation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's a lock right now. And they'll be down. If the season started today, they're down one starter, and that's Cobb. And they certainly have guys that could fill in that. Now, do they think, I don't think that they're going to just give him a spot. I think he's going to have to really be the guy that's better than one of these other guys in order to get in there, unless there are, two or three spots that need to be filled. But I'm looking forward to seeing him. I've not seen him pitch. I might have seen him pitch one or two times in the late innings of a spring training game. But he'll be in camp this year, and I'm eager to see him. I know he's everybody talks about his competitiveness, and some people take it as cocky. Most people tell me it's cocky good. So maybe some of that could rub off on a young team this year.
Yeah, I got to see him in the Futures game, and he looked pretty good there. He has that screwball that nobody can quite figure out, and it's fun to just talk about that pitch as well. So some great questions there, and we will monitor the answers throughout 2018. That'll do it for MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Red Sox reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, happy new year. Reason to believe it'll be a good 2018 for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, you would hope so. They got a nice team coming back. And, obviously everybody's waiting to see if they can make any more additions this winter. But, yeah, I think a lot of teams would love to have the roster the Red Sox have right now.
Yeah, so let's get into who those possible additions could still be, because the names remain the same. And J.D. Martinez, since we last spoken, it's come out that there is reportedly a five-year offer that Martinez has from the Red Sox, which raises questions. Obviously, nobody knows what the amount is, but is this because Scott Boras doesn't like to sign early and he waits out to see if maybe a mystery team pops up? Is Martinez maybe balking at the fact that the Red Sox have three outfielders? I mean, there's a whole lot of questions that remain to be answered, but hopefully Dave Dombrowski seems to still be a belief that this is heading in a good direction.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just the tone that Dave's had all winter is, look, we got to be patient this winter. And that leads me to believe he's directly talking about J.D. Martinez, because he knows he's been in many of these negotiations with Scott Boras in the past. He knows that how they can drag out. And, the Red Sox, if they did make a five-year offer, I'm sure that Boras has looked for probably 7 years, because that's usually what he's looking for his guys who are this age and this ability. So maybe they meet a compromise. Maybe it ends up being five and an option. Maybe it ends up being six. These are all the games you play this time of year. And this offseason is just kind of dragged out more than most for whatever reason. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But, I don't see any other team making a strong play for J.D. Martinez right now. And until I see that, I think the Red Sox have to still be considered the favorites to land him at the end of the day.
Yeah, you look back on other years, and I remember a couple of years ago, Chris Davis was a free agent, Chris Davis with a C, with the Baltimore Orioles. And it went on and on and on. And then the Orioles ended up giving him a kind of a crazy contract when there were seemed like no other bidders. So you got to be careful. And I think the Red Sox are probably looking at that now and saying, hey, why would we raise our offer if there's nobody else involved? We'll just stick to our guns for now.
Yeah, I think that's the way that it's playing out, where the two sides are sort of daring each other. Scott Boras is saying, I dare you to go slowly on this and then watch him sign somewhere else. And the Red Sox are kind of saying, I dare you to go find another bidder who's going to pay J.D. Martinez what we are and is going to give him this kind of chance to win and all these other things. And, I think he could really be a star in Boston. This has kind of been the guy who's been an unheralded player the last couple of years. He could really get the spotlight he deserves playing in Boston. So I think it would be a good fit in a lot of ways. It's just going to be interesting to see how long this takes and when it's finally going to come to some sort of a resolution.
The other big name we continue to hear about is Manny Machado. And in my estimation, at this point, it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me on either side, just because from the Orioles standpoint, obviously you don't want to trade a guy within the division if you can help it. And then from the Red Sox standpoint, it's 1 year, and the Orioles don't seem willing to allow a window for negotiation, and Machado's camp seems to be set on reaching free agency anyway. So, yes, the Red Sox would have the opportunity to push for an extension, but, man, that's a big risk to take for 1 year, despite how good Machado is.
Yeah, I think the cost is could be too prohibitive at the end of the day in terms of players and prospects. And, you're looking at, you got to open up the position for them, too, because they have Devers at third and Bogarts at short. And you trade one of those guys, and you're not going to trade Devers, I don't think, under just about any circumstance. And you trade Bogarts, and then if so, what else do you have to trade? There's this sort of Red Sox farm system isn't very deep right now in terms of elite prospects. If the Orioles are really looking for two cost control of the pitchers, I don't really see the Red Sox. They have Eduardo Rodriguez, but beyond that, I don't really see much of a fit there. And they've already had Eduardo Rodriguez once before. So, yeah, I just don't know if that matches up. I mean, apparently that would be a great a spicy subplot if the Red Sox could get him. But, you know, I don't think it's likely by any means.
Yeah, it's more something to dream about and that kind of thing than reality, it seems like. But, hey, who knows? We will see. Nothing is happening right now. So there's that kind of adds to all the speculation, I think. You have another story up about the catcher situation. And, obviously, it's a good spot to be in if you're the Red Sox, and the fact that you have Christian Vasquez, you have Sandy Leon, and then you hopefully have a healthy Blake Swihart coming back and kind of figuring things out again. Most teams can't get by with three catchers, but you point out in the article the fact that because Swihart has some versatility, in theory the Red Sox maybe could.
Yeah, you know, there's a way that they've talked about this internally. You know, there's a way that they could fit Finnegan Swihart onto that roster where he kind of plays a multi-purpose utility role, you know, almost similar to what Brock Holt's done the last several years. So, you know, it's almost, to me, it's almost a Swihart or Holt scenario. I don't think they have room to carry both these guys on the roster next year. They're both left-handed hitters, so Swihart's a switch hitter. But yeah, I think it would be nice to have the flexibility of a guy who can catch a little bit too and see how this plays out and see what Sandy Leon does and if he earns his keep again to stay on this team. So there's a lot of factors at work here, but yeah, I think you know, Swihart being out of options, it's time to figure out what you have in this guy in the coming year.
Yeah, it's a tough position to be in all around because you can't send him back to the minors. So spring training is certainly going to be interesting. And on a team where there's not necessarily many question marks, that is going to be a race that'll be fun to watch, just how those three guys play it out through spring training. All right, you have a story on RedSox.com about five questions facing the organization in 2018. I want to go into these a little bit, not looking for answers because those will play out as the season goes, but just how important everything is. And number one, you have, will David Price stay healthy? And, of course, that's the biggest of questions. And as good as he was out of the bullpen last year, Ian, they're not paying him all that money to pitch out of the bullpen.
No, he needs a set of start. He needs a set to be, you know, a fourth for you. So, you know, that's going to be, I think, the big story going into the season. What are you going to get out of David Price next year? Is he going to be happy? Obviously, he didn't seem happy a lot, especially with the media in Boston last year. So, you know, he's got that opt-out looming at the end of the year. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic with David Price all the way around.
Yeah, and that opt-out becomes more and more interesting just because he does seem somewhat unhappy. We'll see if that changes, but he hasn't pitched up to that level. And so it's a debate, I'm sure, for him. You know, do you opt out and look to head somewhere else? But you're probably not going to get that same contract. We'll see how that goes. Certainly a big-time question for the Red Sox. Another one is, can Dustin Pedroia bounce back? And he's been injured before and bounced back, but he's not getting any younger, Ian.
Yeah, no, that's just the most significant surgery he's had. So, you know, all eyes are going to be on him. He's going to miss a couple months, probably. Maybe you'll see him around Memorial Day. But everybody wants to see what he's going to look like when he does come back and if he can give you that same. Dustin Pedroia, you've come to expect over the years, because let's face it, he was playing on one leg last year. It's somewhat amazing that he did as well as he did last year. Overall numbers, he really, at the end, he couldn't do much, but for most of the season, he was able to withstand that team. But you'd like to see him play with a little more comfort and have some of that ability that he's demonstrated in the past.
You know he will give 110% when he is back. Whether or not it's effective, that's the thing that is the big question. All right, Alex Cora's first-year manager. So how will Cora manage is the question. And I think we have a little bit of insight into what kind of manager he's going to be, right, based on what he's done in the past as a bench coach and that sort of thing and just what he comes from in the Houston organization.
Yeah, he's a very fiery guy, very energetic. I think he's going to light a fire under some of these guys and just be able to give them, you know, maybe a little bit of tough love at times. You know, I know he's texted Hanley Ramirez quite a bit this offseason, trying to get him going. He learned a lot from the Astros and their winning culture last year with A.J. Hinch and blending in the statistics and all the stuff that goes on in today's game. So I think Alex will do very well, but, you know, you never know until the guy actually goes out there and starts managing.
Yeah, we will find out. Will Hanley Ramirez rake again is the next question. You just mentioned Hanley, and I guess the first step to raking is being healthy, and at least he has that right now.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's, by all accounts, he's very healthy this winter. He had the shoulder surgery. He just couldn't get extension on his swing last year with the left shoulder the way it was bothering him. So you'd like him to be, you know, a little bit more comfortable going forward. And this is a big year for Hanley. You know, he's got basically the end of the last year of his contract unless he gets enough you know, at bats there to, you know, I think it's 500 and low 500 at bats, something like that, 503 at bats maybe he needs for that option to vest for the following year. So, you know, a lot to prove for Hanley this year. He can be a, he can be an every other year kind of guy. So that would be good news for the Red Sox in 2018.
Final question is, what will Rafael Devers do over a full season? And to think about it is kind of scary, but I think you have to pump the brakes a little bit. As good as he was late in the season and as well touted as he was coming up through the system and how he dominated in the minor leagues, hey, there's going to be adjustments, right? I mean, I think Red Sox fans need to be a little cautious with Devers. I would think in his first full season, you're going to see some great home runs and some power, but you're also going to see some struggles.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's going to be some slumps. Guys are going to make adjustments, and he's going to be figuring out these adjustments for the first time in his career. And I think that this is where Alex Cora being able to speak the same language, I think that that'll be very beneficial for Rafael. So you just hope that he can kind of minimize the slumps. But he's so talented and so fun to watch. He just brings such an energy and enthusiasm to this team that, you know, you hope he does have, you know, a big, not quite rookie year because he's already lost his rookie eligibility, but a big first full season in the major leagues.
And with so many veteran guys on this roster, I feel like that energy is going to be as important as what he does on the field. Because I think sometimes when a team is filled with veterans who have been through it all, sometimes things can get a little bit stale. But when they see a young guy like this, and obviously there's other young guys, Benintendi's still young, but you almost think of Betts now as a veteran after 3 years, I guess. But just having a guy like Devers that just has that joy, it can't help but kind of ooze into the other players, I think.
Yeah, you saw that quite a bit last year, the way he really infused that team with his youth and created a lot of excitement there the last couple months of the season. So I expect more of the same coming up in this coming season.
All right, questions that we will get the answers to eventually, whether it be before the season starts or throughout the season. We'll keep an eye on all of them throughout 2018. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.